Philippine City Council joint session with Philippine Planning Commission and the Philippine Transportation Advisory Committee is meeting of Wednesday, July 21st, 2010 is called to order at 6:01 p.m. We should have roll call. That's not on there. That's okay. We will just write in roll call. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. 1A, roll call.
Yeah. Okay, roll call. We'll start with the city manager, please.
Rick Allen here.
John Dunstoffer.
Mayor Shields.
Councilor Barbara Hedges.
Councilor Del McAfee.
Councilor Douglas Worth.
Administrative Assistant Patty Morgan.
Planning Commissioner Dennis Davis.
Planning Commissioner John Thomas.
Planning Commissioner Gloria Carney. And the Transportation Advisory Committee members.
Yeah. There's really, they're not here. There's no quorum, and so.
No quorum required. All right. Yeah. We do have a council quorum, and staff members who need to be here are here. So I will lead us in Pledge of Allegiance. All hands, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Item number three, biogreen discussion. I didn't clarify this with you first, Deborah. Mm-hmm. This is, do you want to introduce this, or should
actually
Bill or Teresa?
Yeah, actually, what we'll do is just go over the protocol that we discussed earlier in the work session, and just like a regular land use application, I think it'd be appropriate tonight for Will to do a staff report, and Teresa, I believe, is here for the partition. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There she is. Okay. And because those are applications before the county, and the county, as a courtesy, gives us the, an opportunity to comment, we should run things similar to how we would do it if we were processing the application. So staff reports, and then the applicant will have an opportunity to discuss their application, and then I'll sum up from our earlier discussions, and then we'll discuss whether we're ready to make a recommendation. And in our earlier session, we talked a lot about how that was really important tonight to do so, to stay on a tight timeline. So with that, we'll have the county staff proceed. All right. Will?
Thank you. My name is William Rhodes. I'm a senior planner with Deschutes County. Got a PowerPoint presentation this evening for you on, there we go. On this text amendment, the BioGreen has submitted a text amendment to Deschutes County to amend the Deschutes County Code, specifically the Lapine Industrial Zone. So I'm going to give you a brief presentation tonight on what the process for a text amendment is under the current rules, and also so a basic outline of those proposed amendments. And there'll be a time for questions and comments, of course, at the end. The text amendment process first here, we're with you this evening as the City of Lapine. We weren't sure what sort of process you were going to use to develop a recommendation, or if you were going to conduct hearings, but you know, ultimately we'll be looking for a recommendation from the City of Lapine on this application. Subsequent after that, the Deschutes County Planning Commission will conduct hearings and issue a recommendation. There's some potential that that process will be conducted jointly with the Board of County Commissioners. It hasn't been decided at the county level how those hearings will be conducted. And then the Board of County Commissioners will conduct hearings either by themselves or jointly with the Planning Commission and make a decision and adopt ordinances. Something that's important to remember is that a text amendment applies to all lands in the zone, in this case the Lapine Industrial District, Industrial Zone. So, you know, while the applicant is working on a specific utility facility on a specific parcel, this text amendment is generic to all properties in the Lapine Industrial District. And that the specific development will be the subject of future applications. So things like traffic, air quality, water quality impacts, as well as site layout and design will be analyzed in a subsequent conditional use and site plan review if this text amendment is approved. The Lapine Industrial Zone is 322 acres. located east of Highway 97, south of Reed Road, and is bisected by both Finley Butte Road and the railroad. Three proposed changes to the industrial zone code. The first is to limit the required screening of industrial storage areas to protect only adjacent residential zones. And I'll give a little bit of detail on each of these in future slides. The second change is to allow utility facility buildings up to 100 feet in height, and presently 45 feet is the maximum. And finally, to allow exhaust stacks on utility facilities up to 150 feet in height, and presently 100 feet is the maximum. These photos are of other biomass plants. These aren't simulations of the proposed plan. A little bit of detail, I've got one slide on each of these proposed amendments. The first amendment is a change to 1861.030(c)(4)(b)(4). And you'll see the language of 4 here, and the underlying portion of it is what's proposed to be added. under the current code, residential zones are protected by screening requirements for storage, loading, and parking areas. So any residential zone at any distance would reasonably expect that they would be screened from having to see storage piles under, you know, under a conditional use site plan approval for this type of facility. The proposed change to the text would remove the screening protections for non-adjacent residential districts. So if your residence is not either adjacent to the property that's being developed for a utility facility or immediately across the street, these screening protections wouldn't apply. The applicant stated that storage piles may be up to 60 feet high. There's adverse visual impacts are likely. Based on my drive around the area, you're going to see this from, you know, back up here, the eastern portion of the Lapine industrial zone, so that larger eastern block, it's going to be a 60-foot pile would be visible from a lot of that area. As you move into the residential district, and I'll show you a map of that up here, there it is, those areas are pretty heavily treed, and the structures and trees would somewhat limit the view of, you know, the utility facility piles, smokestack, and structure. It's going to depend on the particular property and where it's situated in a neighborhood and what sort of vegetation it has if they're going to be able to see these facilities. Staff had suggested some mitigation measures to reduce potential impacts in the staff report, which I trust you all received a copy of.
Good.
So again, this is the Lapine residential zone that's adjacent to the industrial district there. Give you a feel for what's located there. Second text amendment is a change to 1861.030(c)(6)(d), and this would allow utility facility buildings up to 100 feet in height and not adjacent to a residential zone, and presently 45 feet is the maximum. This significantly raises the height for utility facility buildings. This thing's going to be visible from a similar area, and staff had suggested some mitigation requirements and also a change in the proposed language. Staff had discussed with the applicant some clarification language that reaches the same goal but would be easier for the county to administer. You may have seen that in my staff report, and I believe the applicant will speak to that this evening if that language worked for them as well. Third text amendment is a change to 1861.030(6)(e). Previously, we've gone through a text amendment to allow smokestacks, exhaust stacks up to 100 feet in height. And the applicant has indicated that they need exhaust stacks up to 150 feet in height. And this is our third proposed change to the code. Again, raises the height of the exhaust stack. This thing's going to be visible, similar to the cell tower that's presently out there. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at that tower. Mm-hmm. It's, I think, 100 feet to the top, and there's another 3 feet up to the panels. So, you know, where you can see the cell tower, so you will also see the smokestack. And staff has suggested some mitigation measures in the staff report to do what limited things can be done to mitigate the visual impacts of a type of facility. The next steps here, as I mentioned before, the City of Lapine are hoping to establish a process and a timeline to make a recommendation to the Planning Commission and the Board of County Commissioners. Biobrini is requesting an expedited process. It sounds like you may make a recommendation this evening. If you do conduct hearings, you will be very interested in the schedule for that. Because BioGreen needs an expedited process to meet their construction deadlines, a tight attention to the scheduling of these applications and subsequent hearings is going to be important for them to make their required dates. And finally, and it sounds like we may be doing this evening, we'll be very interested to hear your recommendation. The County Planning Commission and Board will conduct public hearings following this recommendation. And that concludes my presentation this evening. Available for questions or comments or anything I can do to help, let me know.
Well, on some of these pictures here, do you know any of the heights that we're looking at right here?
No, unfortunately, these are pictures pulled without context.
Are these biogreen facilities? Does it say biogreen on?
These are biomass plants. So, they are taking wood chips and turning them into energy, but they're in many different countries.
Mm-hmm. Is that the emission coming out there on the left top? Is that what it's going to be like?
I don't know. I'd let the applicant speak to that.
They're on the building, that's approximately 10 stories, is that about what that is?
Roughly.
Did the applicant know how long this process would take? Is that why, or did they not plan for this process, that they're asking for it to be expedited?
I've worked closely with the applicant's team to make them aware of the schedule, the county schedule, and I'm not familiar with their internal issues that led them to coming forward at this point with the text amendment, at a relatively late date. I'd like them to speak to that.
So, can we go over some of the individual text amendments?
Sure.
And, this is you referenced to the staff mitigation measures. Mm-hmm. So we can go over on what those are on each of the text amendments?
Yes. Let's start with the proposed text change one. This is the change to your C4 or B4. One of the issues that staff was concerned about is I was unaware that you could end up with 60-foot high piles of materials. That's larger than the tallest structure that's presently allowed in the zone. And had thought that it might be helpful to limit the structure, the height of stacked materials. This is something that the applicant's going to speak to. I believe that they don't intend to have materials stacked beyond 60 feet in height, but it adds a layer of complexity to the application. If you were to adopt this, this is one of the mitigation measures. There's something called Measure 56 notice, and when a change in land use regulation occurs, such that it restricts the use of a property, all property owners that are affected by that restriction have to be noticed, and there's some legal fine points to it, but there was some concern both by the applicant and staff as well that if Measure 56 notice had to go out to all users in the industrial zone, there's some time associated with that, and it could add difficulty to an already tight schedule. So you'll hear the applicant speak to that issue. There may be other ways to impose this type of restriction without setting off the Measure 56 notice.
So, Will, specifically, your imposition for mitigation is to limit the stacks to 60?
That's what they requested. You could well make the stacks some other height, but given that they had said that they may need stacks up to 60 feet in height, I thought putting a cap on it might be helpful, but again, there's some downsides to that, too, we've learned. The proposed text amendment had initially effectively removed, in the initial proposal, this says that storage, loading, parking areas for uses on parcel adjacent to or across the street from residential districts shall be screened from residential zones. So this has the effect of completely removing screening protections under this section of the code for non-adjacent residential uses. And so staff had suggested a change to this text in saying instead that the trees, vegetation, topography shall be used to the maximum extent practical to screen the area from nearby residences. Obviously, planting trees is going to have some fairly limited ability to screen a facility such as this, but 20 years from now, these lodge poles planted will be 20 feet high and would provide some screening. In my discussions with the applicant, there was a question about, there's another provision in the county code that deals with any sort of commercial development. It's our site plan chapter. And it has a requirement that areas for storage be located and buffered to minimize adverse impacts on neighboring properties. And staff was concerned that, you know, that we're going through a text amendment to remove these protections for non-adjacent properties, and then it may be still enforced from another section. And in my discussions with the applicant, it's not their intent to remove these protections. It's just that the language as it stands currently in the code could reasonably be read that storage facilities must be entirely screened. So that if anyone can see so much as one dot of the building from anywhere, they wouldn't meet the criteria. And so in my discussions with the applicant's attorney today, it appears that my proposed language would be suitable for them, with using the maximum extent practicable for screening. But again, I'll let them speak to if this meets their needs in terms of their development. The second text amendment proposed a change to allow buildings up to 100 feet in height when not adjacent to a residential zone. You'll see on page of my staff report, on pages 6 and 7, I had found the language that they proposed somewhat unwieldy and would be kind of tough to administer, and so I broke it into two sections to make clear that this is a two-pronged test for these developments. One, that the structure is located on a lot that's not adjacent to a residential zone. And second, they had initially proposed that the building or structure is designed to comply with the Oregon Structural Specialty Code to house utility facilities. Utility facility processes that require large areas and heights in excess of 45 feet to accommodate craneways or other special machinery and equipment, including, among others, the production of distribution of electric, gas, or steam power, provided the building or structure is located on a lot that is not adjacent to a residential zone. When I did an analysis of that text, what that really means in terms of what we could apply in terms of criteria is that the structure is the minimum height necessary to accommodate machinery and equipment. And you'll see in my discussion there how I boil that down to that more simple statement of the same issue. And I believe in talking with the applicant's attorney that they're amenable to that simplification. Again, I'd let them speak to that.
Well, for greater clarity, I think it's important for people to know that the allowance of height to 100 feet is for utility facilities alone.
Correct.
So it's not every use in the industrial zone. It's for specific utility facilities.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that height would not allow, for example, if you were having some sort of industrial warehouse that had multiple floors, you couldn't build a 10-story industrial building with, you know, people on each floor. That would be a very different use. This is specifically to accommodate machinery and equipment that are required to be at that height to process materials. The third text amendment, again, is the elevation of the maximum height of the exhaust stack from 100 to 150 feet. Staff had, like, similar to the first text amendment, staff has proposed that a provision be included that exhaust stacks shall be screened from residential zones using trees, vegetation, topography to the minimum, to the maximum extent practicable to screen the stack from view of nearby residences. This is language I lifted largely from our cell tower ordinance. That's also, you know, something that's large, and that the idea that you could screen it completely is reasonable, but provides some screening for that facility. So those are the amendments to the proposal that I had suggested. I wanted to put those out for discussion. There may be other amendments that you want to consider, but those were things that just occurred to me that might limit some of the adverse impacts associated with the development.
Another question about so currently that we're operating under the county rules. So, and we're getting ready to start in implementing ours or writing ours. So what happens if we will go ahead and make this text amendment now? So when we go and rewrite or start implementing ours, do we have to adopt this, or do we?
I guess if we, technically, I suppose there could be changes when we adopt our own code. But what I'm seeing here is consistent with what we talked about in the comprehensive plan. So I'm not seeing anything that would have to be changed, because it's consistent with what we wanted to do in the industrial zones, which was encourage more renewable energy, encourage more development in the LIGI area, and make sure that we didn't create obstacles. So I'm not seeing anything here that I would recommend changes to in the new code. So, and that's good, because you don't want to have something that's completely disparate and cause all kinds of legal problems.
And in the event that you did adopt code that didn't allow this in the zone, suppose you did this as a one-off and then you say, wow, that thing was big, not so sure about those. You could then adopt a zoning ordinance that would say, you know, have some other height requirements associated with it, and this would become what's called a non-conforming use. Informally, these are called grandfathered uses. They're allowed under state law to opt to continue and maintain their operations. Once you have a lawfully established use, you're generally allowed to continue that use. So you could imagine a scenario where you, where this was approved under the current code, the county code, and then, you know, in the future, you decided you didn't want these type of facilities, disallowed them in the zone. This use would continue to be allowed to operate under those state laws that provide for non-conforming uses.
Is there any part of the industrial park where there's not light industrial zoning on the outer edges and then heavy industrial farther in?
The only provisions like that, you see that, for example, the existing language for height to 45 feet is for properties not adjacent to the residential zone.
Okay.
So you see some provisions given to properties that are adjacent to residential zones. And let's see.
Let's go back. So the current zoning doesn't make a distinction between light industrial and heavy?
No, it's all one uniform zone.
Okay.
And you'll notice that there's a kind of an island over on the west side of the business park, closer to McDonald's, Subway, the hotel there. So there's another section over there that's governed by the same code. You see the, let me back up there. There.
Yeah.
Where it is in the plot plan, do you have a plot plan which shows where the BioGreens facilities are?
It's going to be located. Can you see my mouse pointer?
Right. Okay.
The cell tower is located roughly there.
Mm-hmm.
Or and the BioGreen, a little more to the left there.
Right.
The BioGreen facility, when last I spoke to them, was going to be in this area.
Roughly 19 point something, just under 20 acres, I think. Okay. Where is this the woody mass pile right here?
Yes.
Right. You mentioned a lot of people would be able to see a 60-foot pile. All of the industrial type people would be able to see this industrial use. I understand that. I'm not sure that would be a main concern. I think one of the concerns would be, you know, residential that actually moved in after that residential area was established prior to that Lapine Industrial Park.
Mm-hmm.
So they moved into the residential area. Correct me if I'm wrong, but they moved into there with industrial area already established prior to the residential area being established there. Now, granted, you know, for a couple of years they've been looking at this woody area, this treed area over there, but when the realism hits here, I'm not for certain that they're going to have too grave a point that they didn't move in after the industrial park was already established there. So I want to, you know, in all fairness here, it's like the people that move in by the airport and then complain about the plane noise and want the airport to do something. But let's keep in mind that industrial park was there prior to that residential area, okay? The other thing, too, is would not some of these structures, the structures to the south of the woody pile here.
That's the powerhouse.
That's the powerhouse right there. Maybe these questions I should have for BioGreen, I don't know. But so, Will, your main concerns you voiced tonight, or is there any other concerns that you had as a county?
Well, at this point, they're basically asking, you allow utility facilities, you allow exhaust stacks, we'd like them bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the only question of bigger is, what do you see? Mm-hmm. You know, when they come in subsequently to do a conditional use or site plan approval, there'll be questions of traffic, water quality, air quality. Those would come up in any application. Mm-hmm. What they're asking you this evening is, we'd like to make it bigger. And I think that the only impact from that is that you can, it's going to have more of a visual impact. Mm-hmm. I did a driving tour of the area, and I could see the cell tower from here as kind of a flash, clearly down straight line here, clearly down Reed Road. Mm-hmm. I could see it throughout the business park. Mm-hmm. This is the residential zone here, and these lots here are pretty heavily treed. Mm-hmm. I've quickly lost sight of it as I came into this residential area. Mm-hmm. Could clearly see it all the way down past Mid-State, as well as over in the this part of the industrial zone. Mm-hmm. But most of these lots are pretty heavily treed, and also, you know, as soon as you're behind a structure that's, you know, two stories, you're not going to be able to see something at this height. This isn't to say that no one will see it, but I was initially concerned that a lot of people would be looking at this. And I mean, I haven't done a visual simulation, I haven't done a formal survey, but I was surprised based on my kind of my initial assumptions of, you know, being the height of the tower and its visibility from these areas, how quickly you lost view of it in the residential mm-hmm. areas.
All right, so that's basically your main concern was the building and the stacked height.
Right.
And then, the wood pile being 60 foot high. Was that the first mention of the wood pile being 60 foot high? I mean,
that's the first time I had seen that. And there currently is no restriction on the stacking materials. And there may be, it may be both your intent and the Deschutes County Board's intent that we don't want to regulate the stacking of materials. They're not structures. And these things, you know, industries need certain stacking requirements, and, you know, it's maybe not your intent to limit that.
So there was no regulation on the stacking materials, and now we're implementing a 60-foot maximum height.
Now, I've suggested that you consider it. The applicant hasn't suggested it, but mm-hmm. when I was thinking about visual impacts associated with it, I said, here's something that may deal with that issue. But as I mentioned, there's some procedural problems that introduces that particular requirement. And so I believe the applicant will speak to some other ways that a similar level of stack height restriction could be achieved without setting off that Measure 56 notice.
You know, I just want to say that we in Lapine appreciate the county's concern here, because a few miles north on your way home to Bend, you will not be able to see that stack. And we will. And so I appreciate your concern that way.
And just for the record, Nick Lelak, she's got a planning director. I'm not sure if concern is probably, but maybe that's not the right word to use. It's not that it's a concern. We're just thinking about ways to ensure that the impacts are mitigated to the community's benefit mm-hmm. and to other property owners within the Lapine Industrial Park that may choose to move in to their and surrounding neighbors to the greatest extent possible. So we're just looking at ways. Here's a proposal. Is there a way that we can help the applicant and the city make it better? And those are our suggestions.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yes?
I live right off of Mintz there. Okay. And I try very hard to even see the train go by. I would like to see it, but I can't. Mm. I hear it. Just little dashes of it. But there on Mitz, would you be able to build one of those barrier walls that stop sound? Or
under current county regulation on residential properties, you're allowed to have a fence up to 6 feet in height without a building permit. Higher fences up to 8 feet are allowed. Want to talk to the building division about the requirements if you're going to build, for example, a cinder block wall to reduce sound impacts. You want to talk to our building division to see what their permitting requirements are associated with it. But, I don't know that anyone's put one in the county since nearly 6 years I've been with the county.
Isn't there one down by Reed?
Oh, okay. Oh, one of those. Yeah, you know, I'm not familiar with that issue. Can I get your contact information after mm-hmm. the meeting, and I'll follow up on
because
that?
Because that might help, you know, with trees also mm-hmm. in there.
Regarding the screening, did you also consider, I guess, the blow factor? If the screening was also used for mitigating any of the debris flying around the neighborhood? Or?
Oh, I hadn't thought about this. You know, at this point, the that could be helpful. I don't know to what extent, you know, wind may move wood chips. You know, that would be something that would be appropriate to the question of, you know, when you come into the conditional use site plan approval process. You know, the fact that the buildings are getting higher and the stack is getting higher isn't going to affect, presumably, how wood chips are affected by wind. So this is an example where those two processes are forked, and I don't think it would be appropriate to think about wind impacts to wood chips unless there's something about 60 feet high in wood chips that causes them to be more blown around. But that certainly, I mean, to the extent that you've got vegetation around, it's going to trap and slow any sort of inert materials that are being carried by the wind.
If I could just jump in, that's a very good, it's a great perspective, and I hadn't thought about that either, but as a former planning director in Redmond, we had that situation in the light industrial zone where sawdust was blown off of one property into a precision metal machinery shop, and it actually is an issue that DEQ, Department of Environmental Quality, addresses. It wasn't an issue that the city addressed because of the air quality. But it's a great perspective, but maybe some of the landscaping could help mitigate that.
Does DEQ, have they come up with a height yet on the stack? You know, the last I heard, DEQ had some say to the height, stack height. Have they done that?
I'm going to let the applicant speak in
detail. Maybe we should let the applicant do their thing, and then you would have a lot of these questions answered, and then you would get all the information.
Exactly.
That would be super. Can we cut it out? If we could borrow your projection, that would be great.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Projection of VCs as well.
That's fun. I'm Matt Steele with Yick and Williams and Associates in Van. That's my son, Brennan. And attorney Ms. Bancher, who's in the back row, on the principal in the project. Neil Peterson is here, and Rob Robert down at the end. It's going to take just a minute or two to set this up. I'm going to grab my easel and talk about just a couple of things. Will's done a great job of sizing this up, and we do like his language, and it's workable for us. We just do have concerns about procedural issues that might be initiated by that one suggestion, and I'll let Liz speak to that a little bit later. But as Will said, his language would lead us to our goal, and perhaps further protect your interest down here.
We can shut that window for a minute.
Can we do that?
Yep.
Can we just slide it shut?
Is there a manual to cover?
This is your zoning map. The project site is located here. Oops.
Yeah,
I got this correct. We've got, north is to the right, and so here's the residential areas of a lot of concern over here. Again, here's the project site. That cell tower is right near the entrance to the sewage treatment facility, as most of you know. So this is just kind of a general document for relationships. We zoom in just a little bit here. You can see our site plan imposed on an aerial photograph of the vicinity. To help get oriented, here's Mid-State Electric's facility over here. I thought that was interesting, the scale of the projects. You know, Mid-State site, I did the engineering on that site too.
Congratulations.
The site scales, project scales, I thought were kind of comparable. I found that kind of interesting because it's hard to envision what these things look like and scope and scale. So that was one plus. In the intent of our initial language on the screening issue was to kind of create a buffer, kind of a step, almost a light industrial zone between heavy and residential, as you were kind of in that vicinity with your comments. And so, yeah, we were just suggesting that, okay, in our situation here, there is a partition
in process to create the parcel that BioGreen will build on. And so we will have, you know, this other remaining parcel between us and this residential area here. And this parcel, on the other hand, if it remains in its whole state, will be directly across the street from the residential area, and so it would still fall under the same code. And so the area really that would have been impacted by the language that we introduced on the screening issue is the area of the industrial park that you see outlined in orange here. And so you can see it kind of pulled things back from the residential area then. So that was our intent. It's never been our intent to not do any landscaping or any screening or anything like that. We were just going through the site plan and conditional use criteria to make sure we captured all of the potential issues before we started this text amendment process, so we don't have to do it again, or we don't run into a roadblock further down the path. So here's just a little update on the site plan. It's basically the same as document that you see there. We just threw in a little bit of color, and here's the trees. You know, it's relatively inexpensive and easy to plant trees and create that screen. Our concern when I started writing the draft of this conditional use application was when it simply said, you shall be screened from the neighboring subdivision. It's like, that's going to be impossible to do. You know, that's, the interpretation scared me. So, and the application on the county side. So, this kind of we're kind of feeling going in the dark and testing the system to see, okay, how's that going to be applied? How's that going to be interpreted? With the new language that Will has produced, you know, we can easily, and we will, create vegetative screening with tree plantings, obviously evergreens for the most part, so we've got it year-round. Put some aspens to make it as interesting as well. But as you all know, it takes things time to grow. And so, you know, for the first 5 or 6 years, these trees might only be 10, 12 feet high, something like that. That's a fairly big tree. Success rate on trees and plantings increases the smaller they are, or survival rate. So I'm thinking in terms of you know, 2-inch caliper trees, maybe a little bigger. But planting these buffers and these screens along at least 3 sides of the property, and I'm not sure why we couldn't do it over there if it wasn't deemed necessary on the railroad side, is something that we would have been doing anyway. And if that will satisfy the criteria, and you folks, that's great, we're prepared to do that. So there's not much more in this drawing. That cell tower, that existing cell tower, which is 153 feet high, we measured it. It's right there. And so our stack on this facility is going to sit right here. Are we about ready to go, Brent?
Yeah.
All right. See if we can make this one.
We just need one thing out of the bag.
What's that, Brent?
He's a hired guy.
Oh. Is that a mouse?
Yes.
Can you bring up that photo, Brent? Oh, you're not ready. Sorry. This is an image. There's a photograph I took at the corner of Nitz and Foss. This is the residential subdivision corner. I took this just a couple days ago. Knowing that this is probably the direction and the primary concern for a lot of folks. So we are looking into the project. I parked my truck down there so that it gives a little scale effort. It's 7 feet tall. These cross arms on the power poles are 30 feet tall. The existing trees out there, because the area has been thinned, as you all know, that's the size. Those trees are about 25 feet tall, a lot of them. Go ahead and turn on the image, buddy. What we did was impose this image on that same photograph, and we're fading out a little bit here in the foreground, but there's the street intersection. We're going to actually trace that skyline of Planet Peak and before introducing that same site plan you saw on the drawing. We've got the power poles are still in there for some scale. Can you pan left, Brittany, and see if we can see the other the cell tower? There's the cell tower from the same intersection. And if you go out there and take a picture, which I did, that's pretty much what you see. So,
is that brownish? Is that the piles?
Yeah, that would be the chip pile.
Matt, let's scale the height of that stack right there.
That stack is drawn at 150. Mm-hmm. That would be the maximum.
Mm-hmm.
That building, is that the 100-foot building, Brennan?
Yeah, it's got to be around there.
But that is the 150-foot stack. This one, I think that's a 76-foot building there.
Yeah, it doesn't look quite like it.
Right. I think that's a 76-foot building and a 150-foot stack. And Robin, you may want to speak to this later, but there's a couple different technologies available to them and options on equipment that will dictate which height they're at, basically. We're talking about a whole bunch of very expensive equipment, and it's nice to maintain competitive bidding.
Well, my question before, too, was has DEQ had an input on the height of the stack yet?
They will. And maybe Rob and you can, what I've picked up being involved in this process for the last couple of months, that air permit, it's a pollutant there's an acronym for it, but the air quality permit has been applied for.
Mm-hmm.
It has to run concurrent with this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And the state kind of likes to have a land use compatibility established before they dive headlong into this, and vice versa. The county would like to make sure that there isn't an air quality issue before they issue their decision at the end. Now, hopefully we'll have enough, that air quality permit process will be far enough along that they can make that determination. But it's a lengthy, extensive process. DEQ is deeply involved in it, and they basically will establish how tall that stack has to be. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to build them any taller than they have to be because they're expensive to build.
All right.
So DEQ will basically establish that based on the equipment that's proposed and put before them. But that's in process. Let's go ahead and lift off, buddy, and why don't we go down the road, kind of do it from the south side for now. Back up a little bit. There's no room to bring the mouse over there. He's running his mouse on his lap, I think. So we're not flowing quite as freely, but here's a little closer perspective from the southwest again. You can see we will have security fences, and they will have inserts, if that's what you want, to help screen the vinyl inserts in a chain link fence, I would anticipate. So you'll get the ground level screening of a lot of stuff. You know, the parking lot, the car parking lot's going to be back in there, so you won't be seeing any cars from virtually anywhere. But we've got some tall buildings and a tall stack, and that was my concern. You can't hide that stuff with a fence very easily. So, but we do show the lighter colored trees. The darker colored trees are existing. The lighter colored trees are ones that we can plant and intend to. Go ahead and back up, buddy, and maybe go south just to kind of give them a south look at the site. Yeah, okay, just kind of zoom in there a little bit. But, there's the long fuel pile, fuel handling area. The powerhouse, the 150-foot stack, the cooling towers. Those are drawn to scale too, right, Bren? We got information from the Boilermaker just yesterday and inserted that. The substation near Boss Road. There will be a break in some of this fence or some gates anyway for access to that substation, obviously.
How big is that fuel pile?
That's 60 feet tall. That's drawn. That's the maximum.
Okay.
And Rob and Neil might want to speak to that. They don't anticipate going higher than that. It's difficult to manage equipment
wise. Yeah, reclaimers don't reach up any higher than that anyway, so there'd be no reason to go higher than that. Right. And one reason we've left all room over on this side is this where most of your equipment would be working on this side, so your chip pile and your buildings would shield a lot of the noise, basically, from the equipment operating over on this side where the railroad track is. That's one reason we kept this side open, because that would be the yard you'd work in most of the time. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there'll be much noise outside the immediate area there, really.
I was, the initial concept that I saw had this whole site rotated 180 degrees. And as I started to address this criteria, I started, oh man. But when they turned it all around, it solved several problems, and I was happy that they did that. So it was a good adjustment. Why don't you try to view it from the east, buddy? Over the railroad tracks or thereabouts.
Yeah.
Back up a little bit, but takes this computer a little while to catch up. You know, let's let it catch up. Again, on the aerial photograph, and we surveyed all of the trees on the subject parcel. On the neighboring parcel, we just had to drop tree symbols in where there was a shadow in the photo. Mm-hmm. But they're pretty darn close to being a good representation of what's out there and what you'll see. There's a cell tower off there to the right, and so those structures are the same height, or would be potentially. Why don't we zoom around and view it from the north, right? This is the one and only entrance to the project here off of Reed Road, because that is the collector, and there will be enough traffic to warrant limiting the access to the collector. There's some criteria in the code to that effect. The drop-off area for the raw materials and a hand in the area and the fuel feed again. Why don't we go down over there at the corner of Mitz and Reed, buddy? Yeah, right around in there. If we can almost land on the pavement. He's having a little trouble because he doesn't have a working area there. But this is street level, if near that intersection. And so there's the smokestack over there as viewed from this intersection. You will see more of our fencing underneath the canopies of those existing trees. Why don't you pan left just a little bit, bud, so they can see this. There's the cell tower and the fence line down that road. So that's just about all I have. All I have. Any more views of this that anybody cares to see before we turn it off to start answering questions?
Do you have a view from 97?
How far can you back out to the west, bud?
Looks like the fake mountains are going to get in the way. So that's one's pretty far away. I'm not exactly sure where.
Yeah, it'd be pretty hard to see anything from the road level, I would imagine. But, so again, I think we're real comfortable with Will's proposed language with exception of maybe the stack height limitation that would cause that other process. Do you have a question real quick?
Yeah, real quick. All the trucks are going to be coming with the material. What roads will it be going down?
We're getting a traffic consultant on board to do the traffic analysis as required by the county for the conditional use site plan application. He'll probably be on board the next week or so. And a part of those analyses typically include a trip distribution analysis. Where's this stuff coming from? So he'll be doing this homework and he'll be a lot better able to answer that question. We know that there's, you know, an issue at Reed 97, everybody in town does. So that'll be a big issue in his study and want to address the conditional use site plan decision. If there aren't any more questions for me, Liz, you want to talk a little bit about that process?
You want the lights back on?
Yeah, thanks.
That might help. Okay, hi, my name is Liz Fancher, and I'm representing Vitagreen this evening. And I spoke with Will Grubbs earlier today about the site plant staff report, and as Matt had indicated, that all of the things that have been suggested by the county we think are reasonable and make sense, and were things that we intended to do anyway with the site plan, and were things that I think were even in the code, but we don't think there's any harm in putting more language in there and having an actual standard that tells you that you have to do as much as is practical to do and no less. So that all makes sense to us and things will protect the community. I was concerned about the requirement related to the 60-foot stack height. And the reason I have the concern is because the state of Oregon has a rule that requires that property owners receive notice to them anytime there's a change to a zoning district that applies to their property, if it will restrict the use of the property. And if the county's suggestion to put a 60-foot stack height limit comes into effect, that would be a Measure 56 notice requirement situation where it would limit the use of property that's currently not limited. Because people in the industrial zone now can have stacks of whatever height they want to, except to the extent that it's constrained by their site plan review. So Biogreen doesn't want to have stacks any higher than 60 feet. So in speaking with Will, he had suggested that maybe the applicant could offer to limit its future applications to 60 feet in height and no higher, and then not to have to put that in the code. And that certainly will work for the applicant, and if that's acceptable to you, we'd be willing to do that. I also personally believe that the county's code makes this a conditional use, and so that the county could impose a stack height limit anyway. That they have enough general authority to do that, and I think with the applicant saying we will do this as part of asking for your site plan approval and conditional use approval, that is something that would be very enforceable and something we're all happy to agree to. And we're just hoping that that could then just drop the need to affect property owned by other people in the industrial district. So we don't have to send them a happy notice and say, we're downzoning your property right now. And then they get all upset and go through that process.
So in step one, where we're talking about changing the language of the county code, the text amendment, what you're suggesting is that Will's suggestion for a limitation on 60 feet is something that would be easier to handle in the site plan and conditional use,
yes,
which is stage two,
correct,
rather than risk a Measure 56 issue, which would be devastating.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think people are really unhappy unnecessarily. Mm-hmm. I think most people aren't going to propose anything of that height anyway. It's not really anything beyond that height is not really feasible to try to stack something much higher than that. Once you get to a certain point, you need a structure. And so I think it's a non-problem, and I think it can be fixed in another way. So we're hoping that we can just solve it that way because, you know, a law that's meant to do a good thing for property owners in Oregon is actually just going to make it a little more difficult to give an assurance right now in this particular form, but we can provide it in a different way.
Okay.
Does anyone have any questions? Thank you.
Do we have an opportunity to address a few of the questions that we had here, so we can clarify that and get that short up? Rob Rober with Biogreen, and Councillor Hedges had asked a question regarding the stack and the pictures he saw from the county there. And what you saw in the pictures, you know, I don't know what countries they were from or what year those plants were manufactured, but the requirements by DEQ and EPA now require that continuous emissions monitoring system on board. So basically, when you see that thing operating, there will be nothing coming out of that stack. And the only thing that you could see would be vapor from the moisture in the wood being burned off of the wood. So it's a very, very clean process. And you won't have that. Those stacks were probably well over 200 feet, and they were pretty big animals. They were probably 300,000-400,000 pound boilers. And then this gentleman over here had a question about why the text amendment now? You know, why wait till this point? And the county, Nick and those guys have done, they're absolutely right. They've communicated exactly that this is a big process and we need to get on this and take care of this now. And the only thing I can tell you is that this development by no means has been a linear animal to attack. And you run into a situation a lot of times where you get the cart before the horse and you try to do things in a succinct order to make sure that you can progress and make sure that things are right when you do it. So all I can say is that we've had to wait till this point and to feel comfortable with where the development has gone before we could lock in on this text amendment. And then the other question, I think Councilor Adele, you had about the wind regarding the chips and whatnot being blown around. A couple things. The wind blows on that site. The wind comes out of the northwest and the predominantly probably 70% of the time, 70% of the time, 30% of the time it comes out of the southwest. So basically all, most of the wind comes from west-east across that site, so it gets blown off across the industrial site. The wood pile, as we have planned, Neil makes a drum chipper, which is predominantly what the wood will be coming in at, as opposed to hog material. I mean, you'll have probably 70-80% chip material versus a hog material, where in a hog material, you have the hammers beating the material, so you produce the fines, and then you have some bigger particles. Well, his machine makes a uniform 3/4-inch chip. So it's not like you have the sawdust or you have a bunch of fines rolling around. You have a uniform product sitting in those piles. And I hope that answers most of the questions. Yeah.
Has any comparison ever been done to what the emissions from all the burn piles around are compared to something like this?
I'm really not sure. I know that people have taken a hard look at that stuff, but I can tell you that, having that combusted in that furnace, the technology on the back end of that is cleans up much better than burning it out in the forest, and it's way more controlled than even burning your fireplaces.
Bob, is this size a plant? I mean, is it in operation right now? This
there are plants similar to this size, like Lyons Ferrus, Darrington, Washington. They're a little bit smaller plants. The one in Eugene that's just going to be coming online here shortly is exactly that same size, that 200,000-pound system. So you'll have the Seneca sawmills as a very good reference of exactly what that'll look like and what they're dealing with in that.
Where is that in Eugene?
Airport Road and Highway.
Yeah, when you come down 99, you turn off on Airport Road to go to the airport.
Yeah.
Just look to your right. That's Seneca
okay.
Mill.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you'll see the plant being built right there.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Do you have your own construction team, or do you hire local people to build it?
It'll be done here. It'll be hired local.
And then, how many employees will this be? Will this be a year-round, full-time job for these 25 people, or whatever it was?
Correct. It'll be between 22 and 25 people direct at the plant year-round.
And what's the percentage will come from your supervision, and what percentage of that employees will be hired in this local area?
Predominantly most of the employees will come from this area. We have to make sure from the administrative level, mm-hmm. how we're going to approach that. So if there's qualified people here, then we'll hire from here. But it's for this town, so we're going to be hiring local.
Are these trades? Is this union, non-union? What?
This will be non-union. And what I should do, Neil, we have that list of exactly the positions that we're going to be looking for. I can make that available to you guys, and you guys can see that firsthand.
Yeah. How about the Eugene Mill? Is it built all union or non-union?
It's not union.
Mm-hmm. How many construction people are on that project?
They've got about 45 now, I think.
That's the height of it?
It's been higher.
Okay.
They're back a little bit now. They've got a lot of the assembly work done.
Mm-hmm.
With the loggers and the support group that will follow this thing, you're probably looking at 75 people.
Now, are those folks like subcontracted? Do they work for Biogreen? How does that work?
Subcontractors that we hire that will mm-hmm. do the logging and the processing mm-hmm. and the fuel and all whatever that is.
Did the county require a tree inventory?
No. At this point, they're simply asking, can we have these buildings and exhaust stacks higher? So at this point, is there a source for the fuel? Didn't seem like a relevant question. When they come in for the conditional use and site plan approval, someone could reasonably ask, you're planning to build a utility facility, are there materials to burn here? And well, presumably they present some information.
Right, but I was thinking more on the spitting issue.
No, we haven't done a survey of those trees out there. I think that the process that they used of dropping trees where there were shadows on the property, to the extent that I've driven around, I found that their visual simulation matched my experience in driving around out there very well.
So could, if we felt that was important, could we put that in as a requirement for the screening, to mitigate the screening issue?
In stage two of the process, yeah.
In stage O.
That would be something that you would look at when the application for the physical development comes back through the county. And then again, they're going to give us an opportunity to look at that and make comments.
Okay, but wouldn't we address it here within the text amendment, making it a requirement?
No, not really, because right now they're asking for text to exceed height, to have taller height. And the tree issue really isn't critical here, because what happens in stage two is when you'll examine the actual uses and how they'll be screened.
Okay.
Have you chosen a process yet, or are you still in that phase?
A process?
I'm familiar with building gas-fired electrical plants, and typically with those they'll give you a turbine size, general boiler size, and then the design build contract, whoever does the work, designs all that, and out of that comes the size of the building and the size of the process facilities and all that. Is that how you intend to do this? Or
correct.
Yep. And where are you in that process?
Well, right now we've got it narrowed down to two manufacturers competing to provide the facility. One would be the bubbling fluidized bed biomass burner, and one would be a six-cell stoker spreader burner by Wallens. And it's just going to be two things are going to dictate that, DEQ and capital cost.
Okay. So you won't see anything in terms of an actual building. You'll see concepts of what it might look like, or close to what it'll look like.
That's
until I get
spreader.
That.
That's a Welland stoker spreader right there. That's one of the.
That's one of them.
Yep.
Okay.
Question on transportation for you. A number of months ago, you gave us a presentation. We talked about what streets the big trucks are going to be on that are coming from the woods to the plant.
Yes.
And you mentioned that most of the traffic would come off of Highway 31 through Darlene and would end up at the northeast end of the industrial plant and come around the corner over the railroad tracks and into the plant. And that would keep most of the heavy traffic off of 97, off of Finley Butte, off of our surface street. Is that still a promise?
All of the fuels that are going to come from that timberland predominantly would come up probably Darling Way. It makes the most sense. And the fuels that come off of north or south, it's just a logistical matter at that point. So any fuels that come from those other areas would come probably down the Reed Road.
Isn't it true that most of your property where you're going to be harvesting is east off of 31?
All of our property is southeast off of 31.
Okay.
Correct.
So wouldn't it be easier for your trucks to get in and out of Highway 97 if there's a light on Reed Road 97? So it's safe to assume that you close to four or whatever on the Reed Road also.
Sure.
Everyone
it's
else.
Only a million two.
Yeah.
Is anyone here from ODOT? Well, we're safe. Go ahead.
You guys, I'd like to stick to our text amendment discussion here. We'll be here all night long. But this is all very interesting.
I have another one question. Now that the plant in Eugene is well underway, there's a lot of interest in the carbon dioxide as they do the environment and everybody. Do you monitor that yourself, or do you depend on DEQ to do it?
As far as monitoring the carbon dioxide, all emissions at the stack are monitored by DEQ and EPA, so I mean they have that locked down pretty good, but I mean a lot of it's a philosophy. I mean I believe in the cycle of what we're doing, so if you look at the big picture of what we're doing, I believe our process is carbon neutral, and you know that's you know, here, there's two different sides to that. But I'm developing this thing because I believe in the philosophy that this is a carbon neutral process, and we're doing something good for the environment. So that's my take on it.
And there was a big article in the Eugene paper regarding it.
Yep.
And so.
And again, that's two sides of the coin. Right.
So what, any other resistance from the Eugene folks prior to building that plant, other than the emissions?
I imagine that was a tough one for them. I imagine that that was probably an interesting...
I mean, as far as you folks are concerned, it was built in a pre-established industrial area where now you're coming to Lapine in the middle of the forest trying to build a plant, you know. Yeah. And so you didn't have any of the siting type, you know, resistance and such in Eugene, though, right?
They have a lot of
Eugene
is full of environmental.
That's where
they grow up.
That's where
all dream
on. That's where they raise.
So Margaret built the university, and now the university raises the environmentalists.
So how long was that process for you folks?
They worked a good year at it. I mean, in the community, I went for a lot of them. And Seneca addressed them all and just methodically worked down the toilet. It's a state-of-the-art facility they've got there. And the tough part of it is now when you're dealing with DEQ, the first thing they say, well, that's what Seneca's doing, you know. So you're going to get a state-of-the-art facility right here, too. The DEQ won't have anything other than that now.
And for clarification, that's not the Eugene project isn't BioGreen's project, that's Seneca's project.
Mayor, I recommend that maybe we go ahead and allow some of the public to comment on this so you get a feel for that.
Okay.
And because people have traveled and Phil's here and some chambers here, and so I think, and then obviously you'll have more time later for questions, but maybe we should allow them. Some of them might want to go home. So.
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that, and let's remember this is not about the operation of BioGreen itself. It's about the proposed text amendments, right now the height issues. So do we have any questions, comments?
Maybe, Roger, does that go on, Sandy? And then maybe Lee and...
Okay. Roger Lee, I'm the Executive Director of Economic Development for Central Oregon. We started working with BioGreen, I think, kind of from day one when they were looking at northern Klamath County, and we said, how about northern Deschutes County? So, you know, we think this is a great project for the South County, for Lapine, and there's a lot of discussion. We've heard discussions about height across the region, mostly in Bend, about heights and not necessarily about quality or about what's happening in the facility. And so we encourage you to approve this, or I should say recommend this to the county for approval, and consider certainly the applicant as well as the county's recommendations and maybe some limitations in land use that could potentially create. But you know, obviously, I think the first thing on everybody's mind right now is the economy. And I see this as a real chance for you as leaders, as commissioners and counselors to help lead a job creation project in Lapine that will be very important to this community, perhaps the most important thing to happen here in many, many years, both from a job creation perspective, tax base for your new city, and hopefully the launch for a renewable energy kind of cluster that can be built here in Lapine. So those would be my comments.
Okay. Lee, did you have anything?
I'm Lee Smith, and I manage the Lapine Industrial Park for the Lapine Industrial Group. And just very quickly, when I first saw the amendments, I wanted to read through the fine lines, the details, and amendments 2 and 3. I was very pleased to see it apply only to utility facilities, because I had a concern that was expressed earlier that maybe we have somebody wanting to build a 10-story warehouse or something like that, and of course that can't happen under this. But the first one, which is the screening, I'd like to point out that we also do have CCNRs that apply to that property, and we've talked to the BioGreen people, we know what they're planning to do, but in fact, Lapine Industrial Group will require that the property not have any adverse visual impacts on adjacent industrial properties, not just residential. We have been very careful at avoiding things like wrecking yards and other kinds of uses out there that might negatively impact the other tenants in the industrial park, and we would expect to do the same thing here. So I have, I see no objections to this from the standpoint of the Pine Industrial Group. We have a director here who might want to make some other comments about it. Just as an aside, I'd like to let you know that last spring I went over to Eugene and talked with the Eugene Metro planners who had approved the Seneca Sawmill plant. And that heavy industrial zone, Industrial 3, what they call it, there are no height limits. They look at the negative impacts only, potential negative impacts on adjacent properties. And if there are no negative impacts, they'll approve it regardless of heights. So I don't think those are major issues here.
Thank you, Rick. Vic, did you have anything?
Well, I welcome the opportunity to say something here. I think it's, you know, we have a new sign downtown here that says small community, bright future. And we have a culture here of friendliness and trying to survive. And it's been a joy working with BioGreen. They've come in, they've addressed the issues. Just this flopping, I was familiar with the original, was a great concept because they've done everything to make this work. And I think the due diligence and the timing of processes is not only to build it, but to make sure it's successful for the future. I'm in full support of it as a member of LIGI and as a citizen here. And I welcome them full of arms. It's a great opportunity for our community.
Okay, thank you.
Dan Barco with the Chamber, and this may be kind of more my remarks than the Chamber's, but I guess I was just kind of wondering, Ben seems to have three smokestacks, why do we only get one? Really, you know, Will was talking about adverse visual impacts from a big building and a stack, and in a way, maybe you could turn that around and say it's a positive visual impact. That's a sign of production. It's a sign of encouragement that something's going on here, sign of progress, wakening up, going forward. And I think it could be a symbol, kind of like the old mill district. They look back on when they used to be productive, and we can look forward to when we will be productive. And so that's where I'm at with it. Thank you. And thank you for considering the Pine. I really do appreciate that.
Thanks, Dan, for your support.
Thanks, Dan. Anyone else? All right. Council?
Yeah. Just can we require or ask if the hearing could be in La Pine? The joint county planning commission and commissioner meeting?
I could certainly forward that request. It may be that the first available hearing date, the planning commission is fairly booked up. They're working on amendments to our comprehensive plan, and so they are generally booked up for the dates they're available. So it may be that the first available date to keep BioGreen on schedule would be one that they're currently meeting in Deschutes on other matters, and then this as well. I can put that request forward, and I'll let them know that you'd like that, and then certainly as they go to schedule, we'll coordinate it with the city. But there's going to be that conflict of trying to...
You know, we could maybe ask to make sure the conditional use process, where they have they have more time notice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When we do the conditional uses, when you really get down to the nitty-gritty, yeah. Would that work?
Yeah.
What month do we assume that'd be what's the assumption of a site plan review type?
Well, there's a major scheduling question, and that is, will the Planning Commission and Board of County Commissioners hear this matter jointly? If they have to hear it in order, you know, each of these has to be noticed, and then one has to follow the other in sequence. If they agree to hear it jointly, that can move that forward significantly. So, you know, if you make a recommendation tonight, you know, up until this point, we don't have a starting line. We've decided that we're going to wait to hear from you, you know, given that this is your community, what you would like to see happen here. And then we're off at the races. But that first step of how they hear the matter will have may have about a month difference in how the process goes forward. And then once this text amendment is adopted, they then will come in for a conditional use site plan application. Those things, there's also some processing questions about how that will be processed that we'll be looking to some direction from the city from. Typically, you would send this type of matter to a public hearing. You know, given that's a large building, there will be people who will, you know, it'll be a change to what they see around them. You would normally send it to a public hearing. You know, we would be interested to see if there was direction from the city of La Pine that you'd like to see this processed administratively initially, and then see if anyone wanted to appeal it, as opposed to initially sending it to a hearing, which is a longer route. So this is a question that we'll be asking you in the future, is do you have direction to to us about how, as your consultants, you know, we administer the code for you. You know, if you have some direction to us on how you'd like us to process the application, then that's a maybe two steps down the way. So we'll be asking that question later.
Excuse me. Well, up until this point, what have you received in the record from the public?
I have received a single public comment, and he was concerned with primarily water questions. Questions where the water is going to come from, would that drawdown of water impact other wells? Had some questions generally about well use. And I got some responses from our water master, Kyle Gorman, today. And he said, you know, because of the other groundwater issues in Lapine, we have a very good knowledge of how groundwater moves around here, and that he didn't anticipate adverse impacts, you know, to people's wells in the area. But based on the sort of demand that they're talking about, he didn't see that there would be any potential for somebody's well to go dry on this, for example, that they're going to draw down the water table. However, that's a question that would be addressed very directly in the conditional use site plan.
Go ahead.
I'm happy to leave these. We just printed these out earlier today. These are the minutes from our October 8th Planning Commission meeting of 2009 that we had here in Mid-State, where we talked about the first set of text amendments that allowed utility facility in this zone and others. And at that point, we had a BioGreen representative. I'm not sure if the same person is here this evening, but this captures many comments that were raised at that meeting, asking about transportation, asking about emissions, asking about the exhaust and the operations. There were a lot of questions asked at that meeting, and so I'm happy to leave those with you. So
sure.
there are questions in the public about the facility, but the key issue is going to be timing. There's no question. BioGreen needs to move forward in short order. With a hearings officer, it's going to take us, once the board makes the decision on the text amendment, it's about 30 days before we get to a hearings officer. A hearings officer then, if they were to meet sometime in early October, beginning of October, conduct their hearing, often they will keep the record open for 7 days for people to submit additional comments, and then it's 21 to 30 days before they issue a decision, which is then appealable. And BioGreen needs to come in and get their building permits and be underway, from my understanding, by the end of the year. And so the timing of all of these are stacked very tightly between literally this evening and December 31st.
And each one has public comment periods.
Well, if we go through the if we do the public hearing process for a conditional use site plan, the alternative.
But even administratively, a person has an opportunity to come.
There's not a public hearing though. There's not a public discussion. BioGreen, can you tell us what the impacts are going to be on this public, on the public street system? And then there's a response by the traffic engineer. It's not like that. They will submit comments in writing. We will share them with the applicant. We have to issue a decision within 120 days by state law. So there's not a public forum to discuss those issues. So it's a very different decision making process if it's administratively than. But there are different time constraints. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Deborah, did you have any further comments? No, I think it's real clear that the text amendment is stage one, and then the site plan conditional use is stage two. And what Nick's describing is that with each different type of process, whether you hold a public hearing or do the review administratively, there are different levels of public involvement. Timing's a critical issue, and because we're gathered here tonight, if we felt comfortable with the questions and the answers that have come forward with the text amendment to change the language for height, as a staff person, I would recommend that you go forward and make a recommendation tonight. Rick?
Well, I think that we should move forward and make the recommendation. We'd like to have more time, obviously, and do it maybe a hair differently. But the reality is, in talking with the principals here, because of the way it all has to work, if it doesn't, I mean, basically, there's no, like, we'll go ahead and start it in January. I mean, the community has to understand you're all elected, and you're elected to make tough decisions. You're going to have to decide how much public involvement we're going to have. You've had 2 years of this debate. or are you going to move it forward even though you'd like it differently? There is no starting this on the Christmas day in January. If it isn't started by the first part of December, the end of November, there is no BioGreen. There is no, well, we'll start it in the spring of 11. And that's because of tax credits and things that make it all work. There's a federal tax credit and a state tax credit that expire basically December 31st.
Yeah, there's a federal grant. December 31 is a deadline, and then that thing goes void at that point. They're going to rewrite it. We don't know when it's going to come back. It might not come back.
And they can't build the plant without it. So that's, you need to know that. You know, it's like I say, it's not where you want to be, but. So I would say we need to for sure approve this tonight, move it on, and you may be forced to make some of those decisions in 30 or 60 days from now. So in the meantime, you'll be talking to all the people you want to talk to.
I only have one burning question. And why is it a text amendment and not a non-conforming use or something like that?
Well, because what the county code has now is a set of regulations that guide development on properties. And it says you can go to 45 feet. Hmm. Okay, so the text amendment logically says if you're going to change the height requirement, and you've got a height requirement already, you're imposing a new requirement at a taller level. So the text has to reflect that. So a text amendment is the appropriate thing. Changing the height from a height that's already created in their code is the best way to do that.
And so that makes it, when you do the text amendment, then that's where the
you change the
entire industrial.
The regulation changes for the entire industrial zone, but it only applies to utility facilities.
Right. So does that make it more clear? Clarify it more so that then another person who wants to come in later and has something higher, once the text amendment is there, it's already there. They don't have to get a conditional use.
And so then that conforms with the Liggy plan and all that.
Yeah. And the process is correct. That's the best way to regulate it.
Is this something you want to take? You got two parts. This one's a partition, one's a text amendment. Do you want to have votes of them separately?
Sure.
So I would recommend you go ahead and let the Planning Commission vote first. Mm-hmm. Someone make a motion. And keep in mind, you want to not accept the staff recommendation, I'm assuming, on the height issue.
Of the piles. On page 5, that's under section 1861.0306J, that we would not include that in the recommendation.
With just the understanding, because we're not actually doing a hearing, with the understanding that they recognize that you don't want it to exceed the 60 feet, and that would be dealt with during the conditional use process and application.
All right. Oh, okay. Now we'll need two different votes, right?
Planning Commission is the chair. He'll need to run that meeting. You can't run his meeting.
Right.
And he'll need to go ahead and call for a motion, a second, and a vote.
Can I read a letter that I personally drafted? I had the other two folks here that would make up a quorum. Now, this is a draft letter. Keep in mind that we mostly support, and I'm going to read it. From the Planning Commission, City of Lapine, to Lapine City Council, Deschutes County Commissioners. Dear Mayors and Sirs, after reviewing the text amendments from BioGreen Corporation and considering the welfare of the citizens of the City of Lapine, we, the members of the Lapine City Planning Commission, do make the following advisory comments to the Lapine City Council as well as the Deschutes County Commissioners. As well as you all know, the final approval for this development falls solely on the Deschutes County Commission, as land use planning and development is still being subcontracted by the city as of the date of this letter. But whereas the county commission has stated that they value our advice, we make the following statement. After application approvals were to be had by BioGreen Corporation to EPA, DEQ State of Oregon, and County of Deschutes Community Development Department, along with BioGreen's cooperation with local interests, including but not limited to hiring mostly local citizens for the construction and subsequent operation of the plant, it appears the positives outweigh any negatives we can imagine. Furthermore, we welcome the development as a tool used for economic vitality in this area and wish to thank Biogreen for the consideration to develop in Lapine and pledge any and all support where reasonable to enjoy a long-standing relationship here in this area of the state. All those in favor of a approval subsequent to the county's text amendment?
You need to get a motion. You need to have a motion in a second. That's a letter. That's not a motion.
All right.
Is this an approval or just a support?
Okay, a motion made.
I'll move that we accept the text, that we recommend accepting the text statements as delineated by the Community Development Department of the county in their staff report, with the exception of the proposed maximum height of any stack or pile of materials text that would be excluded from our recommendation. I move that we make that.
Motion's been made.
I second.
And seconded on the question. Any further discussion?
No.
All those in favor signify with aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The ayes have it.
Okay, Mayor.
All right. Not quite sure how I'm going to make my motion recommend approval.
Well, you could ask if someone wants to make the motion if you don't want to make it.
Well, yeah. Does anyone want to make this motion? Do you have it formulated?
I move that we accept the recommendation of the Lapine Planning Commission.
I will second that.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Councilor Ward, yes.
Councilor McAfee, yes.
Councilor Hedges, yes.
Mayor Shields, yes.
Councilor Brady, yes.
Motion passes unanimously. All right.
Okay, now we'll move on to the land partition, which will be far shorter. That's just a real easy process. So you have a nice lady from the county here.
Teresa Rosen, I'm the property specialist with Deschutes County. And I'm here just to give you a courtesy update of the fact that we, as the landowner of the some 49 acres in the industrial park, have applied for a two-lot partition. One lot will be 19 and a half acres, which we are under option to Biogreen for their biomass plant. The remainder parcel, if approved, will be available for sale, and we intend to market it for sale for other industrial uses, probably something that will be compatible with the biomass plant. And I bring you this update just in case you get any questions from the public, that you are aware that the process is going on as part of the much larger project.
Do we need a motion on the partition?
Is this just information?
It
just
is.
To let us know
it
you're
is.
Not looking for a
It is, because it's part of the public process, and just so that you know all of the parts of the puzzle that are going on.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess all we need is any...
Debbie, do you think that they need to vote?
I think it would be cleaner since it's a package to really, you know, make some sort of motion.
Yeah, I think the county's looking for a word for you, so
yeah.
They're not here, so I'd recommend you do the same thing. The Planning Commission, you vote, and then move over to the City Council so that there's it's clean and tight.
I'd entertain a motion that we approve the land partition.
We support the land. Support the land partition.
We support an approval for the land partition.
The land partition as submitted here.
As submitted?
Yeah. I'll make that motion.
Motion is made and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The ayes have it.
All right. Do we have a motion to for a recommendation to accept the Planning Commission's recommendation?
I shall move.
I will second.
We move and seconded. Roll call vote, please.
Councilor Ward, yes.
Councilor McAfee, yes.
Councilor Hedges, yes.
Mayor Shields, yes.
Councilor Brainerd, yes.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Yeah. Okay.
Yes,
pardon?
If you, I just have one final comment when you're
sure.
You recognize you're getting an opportunity. One of the things that that BioGreen may suggest doing, and I address the council, but I'm also a director of the is they may consider conducting a series of community meetings with your chamber,
yes.
neighborhood groups, the senior center, the citizens advisory group, mm-hmm. and others, beginning in August and through early September, for education, for information, to answer questions, address concerns, and things of that nature, for two reasons. Number one, sometimes people wait until they get to the final decision maker before they really make their concerns known, and they know that you're an advisory body on this. And so we avoid any surprises with the county's planning commission and board. It may help address any potential questions. As Will said, we've received at least one email this week that wasn't addressed to the city about water. We don't know what other questions might be coming up. And then that may be an avenue to address a lot of the public's concerns and comments, and potentially avoid the need to go through the public hearing process for the conditional use permit and site plan if, again, many of those issues could be addressed between the company directly and the citizens. And then, of course, I would encourage you to participate as well.
That's an excellent idea. Mm-hmm.
Well, the company should do it if they were smart.
Yeah.
That's kind of basic business 101 if you're bringing a big plan into a community. So, yeah, I hope you do that.
Yep.
Okay, and we do have another meeting to start at 7:30, correct?
Well, they're not here.
Okay. I'd like to say I think that was a very good meeting. We had a lot of information crammed into a short time. We didn't understand or didn't realize initially that there was such a time crunch, but I think everyone's comfortable that we got the information that we needed tonight. Must be. We voted on it. I think it went well.
Well, thank you. No, I think you guys did a great job, both groups. You know, we didn't know we'd be voting, and it just kind of stuck up, but you were willing to flow with it, and so I make my hat and the community's hat and the developers and the counties are off to all of you for stepping up in a different than we had planned, but you were willing to go. So it says a lot about the groups here.
Teamwork. Great job, everyone.
And thank you for the visuals. They really helped.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Very
much.
This is great. Yes.
Thank you, Brenda.
Thank you, everyone.
Can I make a motion to adjourn?
Oh, you guys can sure.
It's a joint.
What's a joint session?
I second that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Oh, let's pay you a
scary thing.
Yeah, setting up a public utility.